session number 16855, reel 1.
Major Scott, reel 1. Could you tell me what unit you were in, what rank you had, and what your job was when you went to Korea, please?
Well, I was the second in command of one of the companies, W Company, which was commanded by a man called Charles Mitchell, who was a cousin of mine by marriage. And I was then a recalled reserve, regular army reserve officer, having served during the war with the wartime commission.
And can we say the battalion and regiment, please?
Yes. I was recalled to the Royal Northumberland Fusiliers, known normally as the 5th Fusiliers. And I was very pleased about that because an uncle of mine had served with the regiment before the First World War.
And this was the 1st Battalion?
This is the 1st Battalion, yes.
And what rank did you have at the time?
I was a captain.
How did you feel about being recalled?
A little surprised, I think. I had joined the regular army reserve of officers because I thought perhaps if there was going to be a third world war, I would be one of the first people to be called up and get a good, reasonable job. But instead of which, I found myself going out to Korea. However, that was fine.
When did you go out?
We left England in September or early October 1950 and arrived in Busan, on the southern tip of Korea, on or about the 3rd of November. There were several troop trips involved in that, of course, in moving the whole brigade out.
How much did you know about the situation there before you went?
We had little knowledge of what we would be facing. We knew vaguely, we were quite clear about the reason why we were going out there. But we had not very much knowledge of the problems the Americans were facing and the rout of the United States forces right away down to the Pusan Peninsula and perimeter. We didn't really know quite what to expect when we got ashore.
Had you thought you were going there for long or for a short time?
Oh, we didn't know at that stage, but there was talk of about a year.
What did you find when you got there?
Well, Busan, we were welcomed by an American band, the band leader, which reminded me rather of Snake Hip Johnson. They were all prancing around on the quayside, the crowds of Koreans cheering and clapping and shouting. And we made our way straight over to a railway station and got on a train, a peculiar sort of train, but all the way up to Kaesong, just south of the 38th parallel.
What impression did the country make on you when you got there?
Not very much. I don't think that we began to get some idea what sort of terrain it would be to fight over. Quite high hills and the slopes and covered with trees and vegetation on top, and paddy fields and little Burmese villages. Not little Burmese, sorry, Korean villages. And that's about all. It was a long railway journey. It lasted, as far as I remember, 2 or 3 days. And we passed on the roads. We saw signs, sort of spunky American signs, saying you are now crossing the 38th parallel by courtesy of sudden such a regiment. It's a typical American. We saw a lot of we had a lot of refugees on the train. They just clambered on, sitting on the roof of the carriages and things. And they were getting back up north, having been evacuated down to Busan, or evacuating themselves down to the Busan perimeter. And there was one awful tragedy when one of these steps fell off and the train was moving and just lopped his foot off. And the regimental medical officer was unable to do anything about it because, we were just moving on. But that was a horrible thing. We had to stop every now and again to answer the calls of nature, because there weren't any loos on the train or anything like that. You know, it was pretty hairy going up there.
Where did you go to?
Went to Kaesong, which is just south of the 38th parallel.
What was the purpose of going there?
Well, it's a forming up area, and we were billeted for a while in the town school, because the actual front, it was a very fluid, the operation was very fluid, but the front was way north of Pyongyang, which we wouldn't know of.
And then?
Let me just stop for a minute. In Kaesong, we were billeted in a large school without any heating, and the winter had started. It was damn cold. The only heating we had were little terracotta bowls, charcoal, where we were burning charcoal in. So if I light a barbecue here, it brings it straight back to me of what it was like there. We weren't there for very long, but it was time to settle down, get ourselves reorganized after the trip out from UK. We had time for a sports afternoon and lectures, of course, on training and training of sorts to keep the sailors busy. The battalion was not in action until the end of the month, on the 30th of November, and there was quite a battle against the North Koreans, well north of Kaesong. We'd moved up by then.
Did you take part in that?
Not personally, no. I don't remember it at all. And I think the reason was that W Company, our companies were W, X, Y, and Z. W Company, we were diverted to south of Seoul to guard the bridges over the River Han. And this was the main supply route for the United Nations forces up north. And so those bridges were absolutely vital. I gathered from the action in Sibyonyi, which is where, on the 30th of November, they were attacked by a band of North Korean soldier guerrillas. They were sort of just not under proper command at all. There was no effort at all, no trouble at all in dispersing these North Koreans at that scene. But, of course, when the Chinese came in, it was a very different matter. We'll come on to that later.
But you took part in this guarding of the bridges over the Han River?
Yes. Just this one company. I can show you a photograph of the bridges, if you like, and show you what they were like.
What happened whilst you were guarding the bridges?
Well, nothing. It was just a rather monotonous and boring thing to do, a constant flow of traffic across it, of course, military traffic. And we mounted guard on it just to make certain they weren't sabotaged.
So which month is this that you were there?
This was in December. In December. And we had Christmas in Seoul City, on the Han River Han, that year. By that time, of course, the Chinese had come in, and their offensive, I think, opened towards the end of November, and they've started the second route of the U.S. forces. Didn't go quite as far. Whilst we were there, though, Chinese had come in, we were suddenly called up, I think about the 1st or 2nd, no, 3rd of January, because it was my birthday, to rejoin the battalion. Because the Chinese had attacked the positions the battalion were occupying and had overrun part of one of the companies and had been hand-to-hand fighting in the battalion headquarters, which was really rather serious business. We were summoned to do a counter-attack. It wasn't all that far north of Seoul, so it didn't take all that long to get there. We had to get there in a hurry, though. And the company commander, who was Charles Mitchell, he led and planned and led a counterattack, which was superbly executed. It didn't take very long, and we managed to disperse the most of the Chinese. There were a lot of casualties, a lot of Fusilier casualties, a lot of Chinese casualties. An incident which I think showed the quality of this particular company commander. He had, when the company had recaptured the bit of the positions, he called an O group, an order group. And you know what an O group is, yeah. Yes. And that was his platoon commander, the company sergeant major, and myself. I had not moved up with the company because I was as a second in command. We wouldn't want both of us killed at the same time. So as soon as he called me up, the company commander called me up, I went up in my own Bren carrier, and he started giving out his orders. Well, the Chinese were still sniping at us, and a fusilier was shot. I mean, literally a few yards away, and we were just standing around. And of course, we started to gape at this chap whilst the medical chap went to look after him. And Charles Mitchell said, "Gentlemen, I'll have your attention, please," which just indicated, you know, quite imperturbable.
How was the counterattack carried out?
Well, in a normal way, you would do. You would you would probably attack from one flank or the other, whilst another from the rear would give covering fire. It wasn't an attack which demanded three platoons all going in at once. It was just a set piece military infantry attack, and one platoon would be allotted the main task and supported by another one. And if that didn't work, you'd try another, the third platoon going in another way, but it worked like a clockwork.
What impression did you get of the Chinese enemy in that first contact?
Oh, they were hordes of them, ruthless, and great, a lot of shouting and yelling. The reason they were a formidable enemy was not the sort of thing one had ever met before. They had no regard for their lives. Their commanders had no regard for the lives of the Chinese at all. Their tactics were just hordes and hordes and hordes of them. They would keep coming at you, and they'd suffer the most enormous casualties.
Did you capture any of them?
I don't know whether any were caught at that particular battle. There may well have been, I don't know.
How did the men feel about it afterwards?
That's a difficult question to answer. I think that you should understand that the soldiers we took out to Korea were all soldiers who had served during the war. A lot of them were recalled reservists and had served in North Africa and in Germany. They were not unused to war, and that was a great advantage that we had initially. Later on, when national servicemen arrived, and I'll come on to this point later, it was a slightly different matter, but I'll come on to that later. Can we stop again for a minute? Before we left the Han bridges, we were able to tell our soldiers and fusiliers what had happened and why we were suddenly racing up to help the battalion. And they were said it was obviously quite unacceptable to them that the battalion was being attacked and W Company wasn't there. And they were only too keen to get up to it. And as they said, they were all wartime experienced soldiers. They were recalled reservists. And so they knew what war was about.
And then after this counterattack?
Well, that evening, we executed efficiently one of the most, or the most, difficult of operations in war. And I'm talking at sort of battalion level, but it works at a higher level as well. And that is a withdrawal whilst in contact with the enemy. So you've got to you've got to extract yourself from a very difficult problem where you are still fighting the enemy, but you've got to withdraw. And so you have to do it leapfrogging. And that was done in the dark, very efficiently, by the whole 29 Brigade. I ought to comment, I think this is a skill which the British Army was particularly good at, unlike the United States allies. There's a skill which totally evaded them. Their concept of fighting this war against hordes of Chinese was to get into their transport and bug off out of it. Whereas our teaching was that if the Chinese do get past you, you still hold on. And so it happened more than once that we suddenly found ourselves as a battalion deserted by our flanking units, which might, if they were American, they didn't sort of liaise with you and say, look, we're going out. We just knew they were doing it, but nothing we could do about it.
Where did you withdraw to?
Well, after this battle and the night withdrawal whilst in contact, we withdrew some 40 miles south of Seoul. We obviously didn't do that marching the whole way. We picked up our transport, and that would have been organized by the brigade headquarters to at a certain point, and we'd be able to end bus there and complete the whole journey in our own transport.
Did you dig into new positions there?
Just let me wait. Wherever one went, if you moved position, your first task was to dig yourselves in and prepare sort of defensive positions, or anyway, occupy a hill feature, in such a way that you could actually defend the ground. So we didn't sort of It was something which one did automatically. You were given an area to defend. So that's the way it worked. And so now that was in January and February. I'm generalizing now. We lived in the open most of the time, particularly the platoon. Sometimes company headquarters would be lucky and get into the edge of a village or something. But I should tell you that the winter temperature was something like 20 degrees below zero, and we were living out in the open in it. And it presented quite a lot of problems. For instance, one's nose used to run like mad, and wearing a moustache, the whole of my nose and moustache was frozen solid. As I was wandering around talking to the tunes and at night, just showing that company headquarters are interested in looking after them, all right. In that sort of climate, shaving was a problem. I had an automatic hand-operated battery razor, and so I was all right, and other people used it as well. But trying to get hot water to shave, as soon as you pour it into a mug or something to shave, it froze. Our vehicles at night, or during the day for that matter, you couldn't leave them overnight without starting the engine up every half hour. And particularly with the Bren gun carriers with tracked vehicles, you had to move them a few yards forward, a few yards back, otherwise they'd become frozen into the ground. Let me switch off a minute. Occasionally we would find that we could get the company into a deserted hamlet. This is as we were moving forward again. But trying to restrain the soldiers in enthusiasm to keep warm using the Korean system of underground heating. These mud huts, straw huts, had underground tunnels dug under them. And Koreans would light a little charcoal fire or something at one end, and the natural draft would draw the heat through and warm the floors. Now, in the absence of charcoal, the sailors would grab straw, light that, and that, of course, ignited the whole house. And it was a great problem. One had to try and restrain them. We have to start up. Anyway, so it's covered all that. Over the next few weeks, then, this is January, February, we gradually move north again, north of Seoul. And referring to the overall command, General Walker was the Army commander, the United States Army commander in Korea, and he had been a brave man, was a brave man, but he had lost command, and he was removed. Well, he was removed by the Almighty, not by the Army, because he had a helicopter crash, but he would have had to have been removed. He was killed in a helicopter crash. And really, the United States headquarters, Army headquarters and Corps headquarters, their main thoughts as soon as the Chinese arrived was to get the hell out of it. They didn't consider holding a line. And Walker failed to rouse them and adopt proper, better tactics. All they want was to get away from it and take up another line. The Chinese would go on and take up another line. So he was succeeded, Walker, by General Matthew Bunker Ridgway, who you probably know of. And it was quite uncanny. Within a week, the whole tone and conduct of United Nations force changed. And it is alleged, and I think it's probably true, that when he walked first into the Army Command Headquarters, staff officers and his chief of staff were prepared to show him all the plans for further evacuation. And Ridgway is alleged to have said, "Tear them up. I'm not interested in further withdrawals. We should be going on over to the attack." And it was that sort of attitude of his which, I don't know, it was even down to the lowest level in a British battalion. It seeped through, and everybody all changed. Quite fantastic. I recall trekking over high snow-covered slopes before we went north of Seoul, but in part of that movement forward. And although others were involved in skirmishes and fierce fighting, we on the left of the line were not. And then for the next 2 or 3 weeks, I unfortunately was not around because I fell halfway down a hill in the snow and damaged my back. So I had to be evacuated to Japan for 2 or 3 weeks rest. I got back eventually in early April. So I must have been away for about 3 weeks, I said. We were establishing in early April what became known as the Kansas Line along the south bank of the River Imjin, which again is up by the 38th parallel. I suppose it was not envisaged that we would have to defend that particular area on the River Imjin against a massive Chinese attack. It was known as a sort of check position for any forces that might have to withdraw and use those positions if the Chinese attacked again. We had, because it was a sort of only a temporary position, we hadn't erected wire fences in front of the positions, nor laid any mines. The two forward companies of the battalion, it'd be in this case, I think it was X and Y companies, They were had a front of some 2,000 yards, which is ludicrous, of course, if you're in a defensive position. You can't possibly cover a frontage of 2,000 yards. So, we're now going to talk about the Imjin battle. And bearing in mind that we had this huge coverage, something like if the forward battalions of the whole brigade were covering something like 12,000 yards, which is, I mean, ludicrous. Anyway, on the night on the 22nd of April, I must just interrupt for a moment. It was on the, I think on the 22nd of April, I was due to take a long-distance patrol across the River Han to look for the Chinese, and look for the enemy, to see if I could locate where they were. It was not the only one. I mean, all the towns were sending patrols out. And if the Chinese had not come that night, I'd have been right, and they'd come the next day, we'd have had it. We'd been very lucky to have got away with it. So that was something of a relief. On the night of the 22nd, then the hordes of these Chinese came straight into the attack after, we guessed, at an advance of anything up to 30 or 40 miles overnight. Remember, the Chinese, this was in not a very good climate, they only had sort of gym shoes, and they were carrying quite heavy loads. They didn't have any transport, and they were performing almost inhuman tasks, you know. But they were able to go straight into the attack. They were able to penetrate our area, battalion area, and attack our positions from all sides. So, I mean, normally one's looking for defence all round, agree, but you expect most of it to come from the front or a flank. I mean, it's a bit disconcerting to be attacked from four different directions at once. We had, of course, each company had got what they call SOS targets with pre-arranged artillery fire. So you would just get on the radio and say SOS 1 or SOS 2, what it is. And they'd have that'd be pre-ranged, and they'd call down fire very quickly, both from the heavy mortar battery, 170 heavy mortar battery, and 45 field regiment, RA, 25 pounders. And so that, when the Chinese attacked us, all four companies at once, we were able to inflict considerable casualties on them from this artillery fire. And of course, within the company perimeter, as it were, your small arms fire, and particularly the 36 grenade, was extremely effective.